Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? We welcome you into the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. James Coe here with you on a beautiful Thursday. Not in the closet today. We are actually in studio, treating us with respect, putting some spec on our name.
Actually, it's just because like other big shot podcast people like Bucky and DJ are off doing big shot podcast people thing.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
So
that's about right.
But hey, yeah, no, respect.
Put some spec on my name.
We finally got it.
Or you could look at it like franchise is not here, and they're like, well, they got the riffraff out of the podcast. So now we could put him back in the studio.
That's a very good point. Franchise not in the building today. James Coe, Matt Franchise not here. Matt Harmon, what's going on, pal?
It's tough with Franchise not being here. Like, when Gelhar was out, he was easy to do impressions of on the podcast and make fun of behind his back. I mean, there's not really as much with Franchise. Like, he doesn't have, like, a voice or anything.
Right.
I mean, the sensitivity levels are definitely down.
It's true. The salt levels are.
I don't even have a voice. You just make fun of the accent of my people.
That's definitely not Alex's voice.
Yes.
Debatable.
Debatable. All right.
Thanks for coming to my defense, Chris.
Alex Gelhar, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's nice to be in the studio today.
It is nice.
It always feels good to sit in a real place and not be trapped in the closet.
Yes, very good point. Producer Chris, what's going on?
What's up, buddy? I always like these pods.
Yeah.
You know, I know the fantasy season's over, but a little freestyle action.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, for whatever reason.
There's an echo.
Yeah.
What is it coming? It's coming off the TV. Oh, hold on. I can figure this out.
We got it.
Wait, you got
hold on.
Remote?
Here we go.
Pause.
Mute.
Oh, there it is.
Okay, you guys are watching yourself on television. That's what the problem is.
See, they put us back in the studio, and we're all self-absorbed watching yourselves on the TV.
Well, look, I want to look at myself, obviously, but I don't want to hear myself.
That's fair.
That is insufferable. Do any of you guys like just hate the sound of your own voice?
No.
When I first started in the business, I did. It was tough.
Yeah, I hate it.
Yeah, so there you go. Anyways. Bottom line, here we are. Okay, so we figured all this out. We got the technical issues under the bed. We're good.
We're good.
We're good, baby.
Bunch of professionals. All right, what are we doing?
What are we doing today? We're talking about Coach Speak Part 2, a.k.a. Matt Harmon's piece, When Narratives Ruined Us in 2017.
Some good ones.
There are some good ones. We'll be talking about Terrell Pryor, Joe Mixon, Adrian Peterson in New Orleans. It will be Matt Harmon's piece, which you can find, of course, online, NFL.com/Harmon. In continuation of that, kind of piggybacking off that, we'll talk about narratives that died. Or did they?
Mm.
Dun, 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 dun.
I say you, they did.
Alex Smith can't throw deep. We'll debate. Long layoff optimism. We'll debate. Zach Ertz only performs in December. Well, that's not really up for debate. So narratives that died. Or did they? We shall talk about that. We'll close out with Daily Dash. We'll start with a long round, believe it or not, of your top fantasy headlines.
Breaking news.
News. Jacksonville taking on New England in the AFC Championship game. We broke this game down for NFL Pick'em, which you can watch on Saturday. But, Matt Harmon, we'll start with you. How do you see this game going?
Yeah, kind of like we hit on our Pick'em hit a little bit, at least for me. Like, the thing that I'm going to be watching the most here is, can the Jacksonville Jaguars limit the quick passing game of the New England Patriots.
Right.
That's actually been something they've kind of struggled with this year. So if you look at the Jacksonville Jaguars defense, obviously their secondary is great. Their cornerbacks allow, when they're the nearest defender per next-gen stats, just a 52.1 passer rating. That's the lowest in the NFL. But
that's outrageously low.
Yeah. I mean, they have the two guys on the outside, but even their cornerback, their slot guy, Aaron Colvin, has had a really good year. I believe per next gen stats, he allows like a 77 quarterback rating in coverage. All good guys. You don't want to pick on those players. We know the Patriots are notorious about wanting to attack a team's weakest point. And I think for Jacksonville, if you have to pick a weakness in their defense, it's the middle of the field coverage guys, again, per next gen stats. When the linebackers are the nearest defender when they're targeted, they allow a 103.2 pass rating. That's the sixth highest in the NFL. Mm. I think what the Patriots are going to try to do is try to, you know, use they've got three running backs in the backfield that can catch passes. Deion Lewis, James White, and Rex Burkhead is expected to be back for this game. I expect to see those guys on the field together, you know, multiple different looks, splitting them out of the formation. They're going to probably try to keep the Jags in the base defense with Paul Posluszny as the middle linebacker.
Yeah.
Get some of those guys on those short to intermediate routes. If the Jaguars can limit that, I think they got a better shot to win. Brady has thrown 7 of his 8 picks when he takes longer than 2.5 seconds to release the ball. So that's kind of the key matchup I'm watching for in this game. I'm also going to be breaking that down on NFL Blitz today.
Atta,
if
baby.
You want to watch it on, you know, NFL.twitter.com.
NFL.twitter.com?
Yeah, that's it.
That's it?
That's it. NFL.twitter.com.
That is accurate.
Wow, I thought you just stumbled.
No, that's
like n.f.l.com.
No, I know where to put punctuation. Okay. But yeah, no, that's where you can watch it there.
Good.
Or I'll probably tweet it.
Talvin Smith and Miles Jack on the outside linebacker spots. Those guys are good athletes, but I don't think they're necessarily thinking about coverage. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Paulie P, who, you know, again, a quality player, but not the best athlete in the world.
He's old.
He's old.
Too. Yeah, he's
been around forever, man.
Yes, indeed. God, I remember he played at Penn State, right?
He's a Penn State
linebacker. You?
Good Lord, I remember watching him play at Penn State. That didn't seem that long ago. But yeah, no, they as you mentioned, their linebackers. I think they have high quality linebackers. It's just I don't think coverage is necessarily their thing. To piggyback on that point, we brought this up yesterday as well. But opposing teams are only completing less than 50% of their passes on the outside against their to wide receivers, right? To any and all wide receivers, they're only completing less than 50% of their passes, which is, again, that's crazy,
crazy. Yeah.
In today's league. Meanwhile, if you look at the running backs and tight ends, opposing offenses have been able to complete 71% of their passes to running backs and tight ends. Now, it's not necessarily great production. You look at the yardage, it's not all that. It's not all that. The touchdowns, again, not all that. But when you start thinking about what the Patriots want to get done, they really, as you mentioned, want to throw to their running backs. Of course, they've got Gronkowski there as well. And I think they'll just keep just moving down the field in just small little chunks here and there.
It's a similar defense to what they just faced in Tennessee. Like I was mentioning, like 32% of the pass, like you mentioned, the overall production doesn't look good, but when you look at it in context of what Jacksonville's allowed, 32% of the yards they've given up on the year have been when linebackers are in coverage. That's the sixth highest percentage in the NFL. The team they just faced last week in Tennessee, 34%.
Right.
So they're right ahead of Jacksonville, and we saw over half of Brady's targets go to running backs or tight ends. I mean, Deion Lewis and James White combined for 17. Gronk had 9. And then there was another tight end, I think Jacob Hosteller or whatever. Or
it feels
Hollister.
Like Hollister, yes.
Yeah, he runs the stores. He had 1 target.
It feels like 2 Lego pieces going together here. I mean, honestly, and not in a good way for Jacksonville, because this is the soft spot of their defense, and this is the strength of the Patriots offense. So, again, I was on the Patriots side. There's going to be so many interesting third downs.
Yeah,
it's come up, don't you think?
It's cliche, but it's all going to come back to pressure. Like, can they?
That was what I was just going to say. Yeah. Like, Tom Brady was sacked 35 times this year. That was the 4th most he's been sacked in his entire career.
Is that right?
And that was a top 10 figure in the league. But granted, also, you have to remember, he passed way more times than anybody else in that top 10.
He did.
He threw the ball 581 times this year.
Led the league in passing.
Led the league in pass attempts and yards. However, the Jags have a great pass rush. They have 2 guys with double-digit sacks. They have other ways that can pressure you. I mean, because Yannick Ngakoue and Calais Campbell combined for like 27 sacks, I think. And then Dante Fowler's there. Malik Jackson's there. And the Patriots have issues on the offensive line right now. Adrian Waddle returned to practice with a knee injury I saw this morning on the report, but he's already banged up. He's their second string right tackle. If he goes out, that's going to create a domino effect. And I think that's where the Jags are going to have the most success in this game, is putting pressure on Tom Brady.
That's where they have to win there.
It's cliche, and we say this every time somebody's facing Tom Brady in a pivotal game, but you have to pressure him to beat him, because he's older. I mean, I know he's limber and whatever from his diet and his Pilates and whatnot.
The TB12 method.
But he's also banged up. His right hand is hurt.
I don't buy
it's
that
gonna
report.
Be cold.
I buy that report 0%.
What do you mean?
They put him on the injury report and they said, oh, he dinged up his hand during practice on Wednesday?
I, for one, have no reason to question the Patriots.
Why would we ever doubt the Patriots?
Why would we ever doubt
such
the Patriots?
Such an honest
report.
Yeah,
such an honest team and organization.
Yeah. I don't believe any teams in this league,
in our
league, James,
yes,
would do that.
Oh, man. The fact that he is actually on the injury report is a clear-cut indication he's not injured at all.
He's always on the injury report, but it's always for something like – it's always for an Achilles.
Right, exactly. Again,
something.
Again, the fact that he's on it, it's a clear sign to me he's not injured
at all. Also, before we move on to the other game,
yeah,
Quick poll. What was Paul Posluszny's rookie year?
I know this. 2007?
Because I was off by a year in my
mind. I was going to say 2005.
It was 2007. I thought it was I thought it was 06 when I first pulled it up. But he, dude's been around for 10 years now.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
It's 11, actually.
And you know, this is one of those things, too, where they're on a nice little playoff run. I'm happy for him. You know what I mean? Because he's really had to.
I mean, he went from Buffalo to Jacksonville.
Yikes. And I think his rookie year was last time Jacksonville was in the playoffs, right? But he was with Buffalo. So, like, dude's been in the league 11 years, hasn't sniffed the playoffs.
That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? It's crazy. He reminds me a little bit of a Takeo Spikes. Not quite as good as Takeo Spikes, but he's never won a playoff game. Is that right?
Spikes?
I don't think so.
Because he won Cincinnati, and obviously they haven't won a playoff game
The Eagles and then forever. The 49ers when
I
they were.
I think he was with the Chargers for a
he
little
was the Chargers
bit.
For a while, yeah.
Yeah, he did have bit. A little Chargers stint. Yeah,
okay. Anyways, regardless, we move on. Actually, just to piggyback off of what you just said there, Alex Gilhar, ever since the Marcell Dareus trade, the Jacksonville Jaguars, just from their tackle position, just from the interior part of the line, and as we know, if you want to get pressure on Brady and really make it uncomfortable for him, you really want to get that pressure up the middle. Since the Dareus trade, Jacksonville has actually generated the fourth highest quarterback pressures from just their interior line in the NFL since the Dareus trade, which happened, I think, in week 9.
Yeah, it gives them nice depth in that interior, which is always great against a team that's going to run a lot of plays like the Patriots, because you got Dareus, you've got Malik Jackson, Calais Campbell, Avery Jones. All those guys can play in the interior and plug up lanes and put some pressure on the QB.
And we just saw Dareus get after it on Big Ben against Pittsburgh last week as well. So he will have a role, at least if Jacksonville wants to get a win. He will have a role in this game as well. All right, Minnesota, Philadelphia on the other side, on the NFC side. How does this game go, Alex Gelhar?
Oh, this is an old-fashioned slobber knocker.
Slobber
Two good
knocker,
defenses
man.
Meeting in the championship.
What do you
think? Old school football.
What do you think the final score total will be?
Hold on, let me do some quick math. 34.
That would even be under certain projected line.
Wow, interesting.
I think it's a sneaky shootout.
You think?
No way.
I think it's going to be pretty low scoring.
Okay. Well, anyways, regardless, how do you see the game going there?
I think it's going to be a lot of long drives that end with long field goals or like those punts where they're at like the 40-yard line. It's like, do we go for it? Do we punt? Do we kick a 59-yard field goal? Okay, we're going to punt and play field position.
Amazing.
So I think it's going to come down to whichever team can make a few more of those big crucial plays, and I think I'd trust the Vikings to make that, because they've got a little bit of that magic, they've got a little bit of that moxie, and they've got the quarterback and wide receivers with the chemistry to go make those plays. Like, on crucial third downs, Case Keenum can scramble out of the pocket a little bit, throw it to Adam Thielen, know he's going to go up and make that catch. Throw it to Diggs, know he's going to go up and make that catch. He's got Kyle Rudolph, too.
Obviously,
not to say
he knows if he throws it to Diggs, he's going to make
that catch. Not to say that Foles doesn't have weapons, but Foles just hasn't shown in his relief effort yet the consistent ability to make those plays, and especially against a defense as talented and fast as Minnesota's, I worry that the Eagles are going to, if they get behind a little bit, are going to struggle to come back.
And, you know, the other thing, too, is there's a lot of timing routes in Philadelphia's offense, and Nick Foles doesn't seem to have that timing down. That's the problem to me. I don't see how Philadelphia – I don't know.
Well,
somebody talked me off of this. How does Philadelphia win this ball game?
They play smart. Like, they coached. I mean, Doug Peterson, to his credit, called a great game against the Falcons with a lot of screens and a lot of simpler passes and the RPO, the old run pass option.
The old RPO.
So they gotta keep it simple for him and keep him on time and get him into a rhythm early. Like, no opening the game 50-yard bombs to Torrey Smith. Come on. Come on, Doug Peterson. You're a West Coast disciple. Let's get your slants, your screens, get him in a rhythm, get him comfortable. And, you know, like, feed a Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount. Like, let them go to work. That's what was starting to work really well for them against Atlanta.
Harmon?
I would say you have to commit to the run and know that there's not going to be a ton of efficient, quick gains against the Vikings defense. But I think a few – I just posted a piece about championship Sunday mismatches.
Okay.
And that's on the website NFL.com. If you've, that one's just NFL.
Did you incite the rage of the Eagles' nest again with this piece?
I don't think so. I tried to be extra careful to those delicate flowers.
Mismatch Vikings versus Eagles?
That whole piece is why you guys suck. No, I'm kidding. But one thing I'm obviously looking at, like in the Eagles secondary, their kind of weakest point is Jalen Mills, their cornerback they've had.
Right.
Ronald Darby, when he's been healthy, has been pretty good this year. He's definitely an opportunistic guy. He can get beat, but he can also make you pay with some turnovers too. Right. Jalen Mills allowed 9 touchdowns this year per Pro Football Focus in coverage, and that was the most out of any players that have played over 200 snaps. Well, I mean, he led all cornerbacks, obviously. And then he's going to see a lot of Stephon Diggs. I think that's going to be kind of a matchup to watch.
That's a problem.
Diggs led all wide receivers in passer rating when targeted in tight coverage. So that's going to obviously, we saw what he did with just 0.3 yards of separation on that game-winning touchdown.
Right.
So I think that's going to be one matchup to watch. Like, how can the Vikings look to get Diggs and Thielen running against Mills at that left cornerback spot? Also, I think if you think about how are the Eagles going to win this game, they got to put a ton of heat on Case Keenum, and the Vikings have some issues on the offensive line. They tried to move Mike Remmers to left guard. They opened up that right tackle spot. The Eagles were the best pass rushing defense in the NFL. Keenum had a 5.1 passer rating when under pressure last week against the Saints.
Interesting.
That's not what he's been really good under pressure for most of the year, but he started to show some flaws and then was just throwing those kind of Case Keenum YOLO balls,
which
sometimes work out, but could also kind of make the Vikings pay. So that's going to be one way that they have to. And then their offensive line also has to hold up.
The Vikings?
No, the Eagles too. Like, if their pass protection has to be really good, we know Foles is not the improviser that Carson Wentz is, who can move off his spot and create plays. But the Vikings obviously have Everson Griffin, they have Danielle Hunter,
right,
and their left tackle, whose first name I can't pronounce, but the last name Vitae, who's replacing Jason Peters, he's allowed 9 sacks and 10 hits this year, which is top 3 among left tackles. So he has to play really good, really well. So it's going to come down to kind of those quarterback performances and who plays less like the backup.
Yep. Philadelphia's defensive line, one of the best in the NFL.
And one of the deepest.
And one of the deepest in the NFL. And they get great production from their linebackers as well. Still a highly underrated bunch.
Yeah, they don't get mentioned, I mean, with Jacksonville.
That's what I'm saying.
Because they don't have the complete defense of like a Jacksonville and a Minnesota. But they are they're aggressive up front. And like Gelhar mentioned, they're deep. I mean, they have Derek Barnett, they have Vinnie Curry, they have Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox are kind of the studs.
What hurts them too is they don't have a splash player. Like, people who watch the game a lot know Fletcher Cox is really good, but he's not like Calais Campbell. He didn't drop 14 sacks this season. Or they don't have, you know, that, like, Brandon Graham's great off the edge, but he didn't like rack up the numbers like a Yannick Ngakoue did.
Right.
So
right.
They're all collectively very good and role players, but they just don't have that splash guy.
I think for most of the year too, they were overshadowed by the offense, and Carson Wentz was rightly the story of the Eagles.
Yeah.
But the defense has been just as good, and I think, I mean, Fletcher Cox is like just as good as those guys.
He's great.
So I mean, they have that star. They have it all, but you're right. Like, that's why they don't have the credit.
Here's a philosophical question: do you think that defenses don't get credit unless you have a great corner?
They're kind of, well, they're like the every offseason there's the debate about who's the best cornerback in the NFL. Like, it's definitely kind
but
of
do you know
a
what
sexy
I'm saying?
Position.
Yeah, because even when with Seattle, it was when Seattle was, you know, Legion of Boom, it was they had their front guy in Richard Sherman.
You know, I think that philosophically, I think you are hitting on the point, but doesn't have to be cornerback. You just need your front man.
Yeah.
You need your personality. You know, the Jags had a lot of good pieces, but then they got Jalen Ramsey, and because like Calais Campbell's probably the best player, one of the best players on the defense, but he's quiet,
he's
reserved,
not,
veteran. Yeah. You know, Jalen Ramsey's the one saying we're going to Super
That's
Bowl
what
and we're
I'm
going
saying.
To win that B.
That's what I'm you, saying.
And, like, I think even, like, for the Panthers, they're great defenses. They didn't necessarily have – I mean, they had Josh Norman for a while, but Luke Kuechly was always, like, the rock,
right,
their front man.
The guy,
okay.
You know, he was their clean cut. He was, like, the Bon Jovi of front men for them.
You know what? He was.
Why do you keep saying was? He's still playing.
Still, no, I mean, still is. Like, well, they're out of the playoffs now. And, like,
relax,
their defense wasn't as great, but
when they were considered an elite defense, it was because of Josh Norman.
Right. Yeah, they have – but – I think Keller's right in that it's just like the person, like the personality with the Ravens. It was Ray Lewis. It was Ed Reed. Like,
I mean, even for those Broncos defenses, I didn't think to Aqib Talib or Chris Harris versus as great as they were. I thought to Von Miller.
Because he
would be getting in the backfield. Right. He would be gyrating. I'd be like, "What? That's you're getting close to the pump limit there, Von. Like, let's settle down."
The pump limit. But the Eagles don't have that guy. I mean, they don't have a loud mouth.
You
know, whatever.
You're right.
We'll stay with the Eagles here. Pat Shurmur expected to be the new head man for the New York Football Giants when the Eagles season is at a close.
Vikings coordinator.
It's fair though, because he is an Eagles guy, former assistant.
Todd Haley in Pittsburgh out as a Steelers OC. Pittsburgh going with quarterback coach Randy Fichtner.
To replace
Todd Haley. If you don't know how to pronounce his name, it's because kind of sort of came out of nowhere. Ian Rappaport, NFL insider, said the relationship between Big Ben and Haley was a factor. I would imagine Haley breaking his hip in a bar fight during the playoffs played a role.
Forgot about that.
As well.
At the Tequila Cowboy, was it?
I don't know what it was.
I believe that was the... I went and did some investigative journalism on the Tequila Cowboy.
Yes, and what were the reviews?
I'm not some not good Yelp reviews.
Not good Yelp.
Not some good Yelp reviews. So I don't know.
TripAdvisor, some one stars.
Yeah, no, I just moved, so like I'm kind of constantly on Yelp, like looking up places near me, and I've like never. And now it's almost like a little weird hobby. I've never been the Yelp guy, but now it's like, oh, let me like dig into it. So I was like, when I heard, you know,
You've left one spectacular review.
From the karaoke place. That's right.
That's right. The Korean karaoke. What is it? Like, you get a free bottle of something if you...
Yeah, we got a free bottle of, like, super cheap champagne for
you
leaving a review.
That's right, leave a review.
Yes, that was good.
I don't know that there's much to take from the Fichtner hiring because we don't really know any sort of track record. And also the benefit is him getting promoted to an offense like this is... Guess what? It's still going to go through Ben and through Bell and Brown.
Yeah.
There's probably no real change.
Sounds like a comfort thing.
Ben lobbied hard for him.
Well, because when the Steelers like forced Bruce Arians into retirement, Ben was not happy about that, and he and Haley have kind of always been button heads a little bit.
Exactly.
So, and Haley seems like he's might be a tough guy to work with. I don't know.
Seems like he's a little bit of a yeller. Going back, I didn't even get your picks though. Jacksonville, New England. Who do you got, Gelhar?
Jax.
Harmon?
Jags.
I'm going New England. Chris, what do you got?
I'm going New England, too.
New England? Okay, 2-2. Minnesota versus Philadelphia. Alex Gelhar, who do you got?
Minnesota.
Same.
I'm going Minnesota too. Yeah, Minnesota.
I think Philly has a chance, but
throw them
just...
dog masks on.
You look at.
I know, seriously.
I think the trouble for Philly now is like they've been dealt such a rough hand, like losing Carson Wentz, all this stuff, and now not only they have to welcome a very very good team into their home stadium, but it's like they got the damn team of destiny mojo coming in. Like they just won on that climactic play.
They're playing so loose.
It's hard to get by a team
that's
like that.
Saying,
that's
man.
That good, that well coached, and has that like. Intangible quality going.
Guys, we could joke about the Patriots playing the Titans in the divisional round, but if Brady gets through this Jacksonville defense and then happens to meet the Minnesota Vikings in the Super Bowl, and that defense, that's about as impressive as it gets.
I don't want it to happen. I'd rather have this Jags defense put him on his back 8 times.
I don't know, man. I mean, if they get past Jacksonville, I don't think it's all that impressive. I got to be honest with you, man. Because I think the number one reason why I don't think, Jacksonville wins this ballgame is, again, can they put up the points? And I know that they've been a high-scoring offense as of late. But against a well-coached, well-coached team with a game plan, are they going to be able to put up those points? Is Blake Bortles going to be able to escape,
What pressure?
Mistake-free.
Escape mistake-free.
Going back to what Brady, his bugaboo's always been,
good Ds.
Good Ds. Get to him with four.
Yeah.
And if you can get
Denver's
to him with four.
Always,
Denver, Jacksonville, Minnesota with those eight-gap blitzes. I don't know. I think it'd be a pretty impressive road. Taking the Titans out of it, obviously.
I mean, some of the recent games, they put up 24 against a stout Arizona defense, 30 points against Seattle defense.
No, they've been a high-scoring offense as of late. It's been crazy.
45 against the Texans, 33 against the 49ers, and then 45 against the Steelers.
I mean, we really didn't even talk about, how is New England going to defend Jacksonville and what their offensive game plan might look like.
Right.
How do you contain Tommy Bohannon?
Well, I mean, obviously, yeah, it's like they don't have a ton of frontline players outside of Fournette, but like, do for one, how does he look coming into this game?
Right, he's a little dinged up.
He's dinged up. Right. Like he's also had kind of just like a schizophrenic rookie year, and most of that's been with injuries. He's looked really good when he's good, and he's looked just like just another guy when he's been bad.
Yeah.
And then Bortles, like, what do they do to account for his running around? I mean, because the Patriots are typically a high man coverage defense, and
yep.
most man coverage defenses give up a lot of rushing yards to quarterbacks because the players have to turn their backs. Like, do they leave somebody in to spy Bortles? Because I think if one thing,
no,
I don't know, but I think if there's one, because he's not like a designed runner, but it's a lot of it's just he takes off and scoots. And I would imagine that the last thing that Bill Belichick and the Patriots want to do
get run all over on by
run
Blake
over
Bortles.
By Blake Bortles. Like it's one thing to lose to him if he just has a great game throwing it, but if they're gonna lose because he's ripping off, you know, those
if he rushes for 86 yards again or whatever.
Like, I can't imagine that's something I'm interested in. Yeah.
I would love to see, and because I was reading an article about how they shut down Derrick Henry's, you know, they played their like their base package with like their like typical alignment and just stacked the box and kind of made Marcus Mariota throw against them. But I would love to see them do that against the Jags and then have Blake do those read option plays and take off a couple times.
Yeah.
Just to keep him honest.
Because, I mean, look, like the Jags, they don't have, again, many frontline receivers, but I'm a little more scared of them making big plays if they spread me out versus the Titans, you know, making them spread it out. So.
Well, game plan-wise, too. I mean, you know Tennessee's not taking too many deep shots, you know what I'm saying?
Right, and the Jags have – big play receivers.
Yeah, they do.
They do. They can go down the field.
Keelan Cole,
for sure.
Dede Westbrook.
Yeah.
So,
all right, there you go. A lot of OC news, by the way, around the league. Jets surprisingly fired John Morton as their offensive coordinator. The Jets, remember, were expected to be the worst team in the league by far, probably the worst offense in the league. I think they exceeded expectations. I think they were a pleasant surprise, both in the NFL, in real life, and in fantasy as well. Now, again, the Jets did finish fifth with the fifth fewest total yards, but if you take away that game where Josh McCown got hurt against Denver, where they were limited to just 100 total yards in that game, the Jets would have finished with a very respectable 319 yards per game if you take out that Denver game, which is
and
pretty much middle of the
McCown stayed the rest of the season, too. They probably would have bump that up even more because they got pettied hard at the end of the season.
Mark Helfrich is the new offensive coordinator in Chicago. He was most recently the head coach at Oregon. He just got fired this past offseason. He is a Chip Kelly. No, he got fired 2 years ago, didn't he? He is a Chip Kelly disciple. I think this could actually
I'll tell you what. I don't like it.
You don't like
as a Packer fan. Okay. I don't like seeing the Bears getting Matt Nagy and now Helfrich on the offense.
See,
that could be a good combo. They still need to get some more weapons on that offense, but
they do.
If they have a quarterback and now they've got some offensive minds around them, I don't like it.
So here's
the same thing when the Vikings hired Zimmer. Didn't like it.
Here's the thing with Helfrich, which I think is interesting. He's, at least in his tenure, been able to get a lot of production from not necessarily, you know, big name players. You know, Oregon recruits in a different kind of way, if that makes any sense. So I'm interested to see what he can do with the cast of characters that he's got in Chicago. I think it's a smart hire because, again, this is a guy that has a track record to be able to game plan around his players and not the other way around. So
it also looks like they went out and got two guys that are a little more pass-friendly in their schemes with Nagy and Helfrich versus John Fox, who, if he could, would just run the ball 34 times a game and win 12-6.
I will say this as well. I'm actually excited about what that means for Jordan Howard because both Nagy and Helfrich have done a really good job at generating advantageous situations for their running backs. So I don't know. If Jordan Howard, I get that he's a liability in the pass game. Not necessarily. I don't know if that necessarily matters. I think they'll be able to game plan a situation where he'll be able to run against, light boxes.
Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs really transitioned to like almost a college style offense with Alex Smith there in Kansas City,
right?
And Andy Reid employing a lot of spread.
Yeah,
concepts.
Spread them out, baby.
And I think that now if they're going to bring some of that Chip Kelly pace in, that's really exciting for fantasy.
It is. Brian Schottenheimer is the new OC in Seattle.
Boo.
He was most recently the quarterback coach in Indianapolis. He was also the OC for the Jets for six seasons from 2006 to 2011. Obviously the son of the very famous coach. How's this man not in the Hall of Fame? Marty Schottenheimer, not in the Hall of Fame. He's the only coach with 200 wins to not be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But anyways, his son, Brian Schottenheimer, now the new man in Seattle.
Schottenheimer, like, once upon a time was a real hot assistant
coach
when he was with the Jets.
Oh, yeah.
He had some of that early kind of offensive success with Mark Sanchez. And then obviously he's fallen out of favor since then. But I know this is a hire that has a lot of people down, but I'm slightly interested to see if, you know, if the reason those Jets offenses fell apart was more because they were a Rex Ryan coach.
Oh, yeah.
Not because so 100%. Much of Schottenheimer. I know a lot of people are down in this hire, but I at least think it's interesting to see if he can recapture some of that early career momentum.
I think after his stint with the Jets, I think he went to college and was an offensive coordinator for one of those big programs in the SEC or something like
that. And then he went to the Rams as well.
Did he go
or was he the Rams before the Jets?
He was with the Rams after the Jets. I think he went.
Yeah, he went Rams 2012, 2013, 2014.
Got it. Okay.
His best offense was in 2010, excuse me, with the Jets. They were 11th in yards, 13th in points.
That's actually pretty impressive, given what the Jets were trying to get done there. That's actually pretty good. All right, let's talk about Coach Speak Part 2, a.k.a. When Narratives Ruined Us in 2017. Find the piece at NFL.com/Harmon. It's actually a really, really, really fun piece. I jokingly call it Coach Speak Part 2 because Harmon had written a Coach Speak article a couple weeks back. But this is slightly different. This is more of you know, general consensus leading us astray.
Right, narratives, and not so much in the typical fashion of, like, a revenge game narrative or whatever, in-game things, but, like, long stories that there were many sides contributed to this. sometimes it's a coach saying something along with players saying something along with, like, the fantasy community buying into something.
Terrell Pryor one, which you lead it off with, is by far the biggest.
So, there's no doubt.
Yeah, let's just jump into Terrell Pryor. Like, I think that this one actually, and there's a couple of lessons to tell yourself in all these.
Okay.
It's not just like
making fun of this stuff.
Not just making fun of all of us and making fun of the teams and the players. Like, I think the one thing with Terrell Pryor, like, if you remember when he signed with Washington, for one, I always thought it was a little weird that Cleveland just let him
walk.
Well, he turned down their contract.
He turned down their contract, which I thought was, you know, again, a little strange. And then he really signed, like, he signed a 1-year, $6 million deal with Washington.
He was betting on himself.
But that's like, you know, it's pennies. That's nothing. It's funny now, there's apparently rumors he might even go back to Cleveland, or at least as a candidate to do that, which, you know, may or may not come to fruition. But I think the thing that people that loved Pryor in the preseason fell victim to, like, a logical fallacy that often happens with wide receivers is, like, X receiver was productive with bad quarterbacks. Therefore, just imagine what he'll do now that he's playing with X good quarterback. It just doesn't always happen that way, especially when receivers change teams. You know, it's one thing, like, to get 157 inefficient targets from the Cleveland Browns quarterbacks to then, you know, I think the most optimistic projections for him were really like 115, 120 targets. That's a big drop off, even if it's with a better quarterback. So that was that little fairy tale wasn't enough. Then, of course, the vine that hit the video clip that hit Twitter of him just mashing this one-handed catch, and it was like, when that happened,
there were a couple of them. You have one in the video, but I remember another one too.
No, there were, yeah,
there were several. But it's like every time it was third. Every fantasy analyst would just line up to tell you how awesome this guy was going to be. And it's like I know a lot of people didn't make an evaluation off one training camp highlight,
right? But that was the tipping point.
That was the tipping
point. Right? Well, because it was everybody who was high on Pryor this offseason was. Understanding he could have a very mediocre floor because Washington spreads the ball out so much, but there was also a very real ceiling there.
Yeah, you're chasing
his raw athleticism.
100%.
To over 200 targets had just vacated the team.
Yep.
Like Josh Doctson, nobody still knew what was going to happen with him. Jordan Reed could have got injured. So, yes, there was the very realistic, like, 100 to 115 target season, but there was also, like, if things broke right, he could get 130 targets and you know, be a red zone threat with his size. Don't shake your head over
here. There was no scenario unless everybody got hurt.
Which was very possible.
And it, well,
Jordan, what happened to Jordan Reed? Hurt.
Yeah, and it didn't. It didn't matter. They still had a tight end. That.
But guess who else got hurt? Terrell Pryor.
Right. Yeah, Terrell.
But I'm saying, so like the people that wanted to chase that ceiling, then they saw this video, and that Reed. Was like proof of concept.
Yeah, it's, exactly. Proof it's confirmation bias. A little perfect. Catnip. Yeah, there. Yeah, proof of concept is a good.
Perfect. Point, perfect. That was great. Yeah. No, I was 100% in the Terrell Pryor camp. Brad Evans too was. Oh my gosh, he was so big.
It was. I mean, he was a third-round pick.
That's what I'm
like
saying. A lot of folks.
Like, it's a consensus opinion.
Yeah, exactly. Joe Mixon is the quote-unquote most talented running back of a loaded rookie running back class that included Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, Kareem Hunt, Alvin Kamara. But Joe Mixon, ladies and gentlemen.
The title of this section, Joe Mixon, the best back in the draft, but why should I care? If you just search, I even linked to it, just feel free to scan Twitter, like just search Joe Mixon talent, and you will see, you know, fantasy analysts, dynasty owners just lining up to tell you how talented this guy was.
I found it to be odd.
Right, and I think that Mixon's a talented back, but again, who cares when, like, going into the season, there was really no hard evidence
None.
That he was going to be the lead back.
Zero.
Jeremy Hill was getting work. Gio Bernard was still getting work in the passing game. But then, because Jeremy Hill went to injured reserve, he actually did end up averaging 17 touches per game from weeks 3 to 11. So you really can't use an excuse of, like,
he didn't get the opportunity.
He didn't get the ball. And he averaged a sick 3.5 yards per carry, finished outside the top 30 fantasy backs on the year. And, you know, you can
– clearly outperformed by Gio Bernard.
Definitely.
100% by, like, any running back efficiency metric. Right. Whether you look at, like, our next-gen stats metrics, when you look at, like, PFF's elusiveness metrics.
Yep.
Mixon was terrible pretty much in all of them. And you can, like – the Mixon mega talent truthers will obviously point to the situation being what doomed him. Bad offense, not a great run-blocking offense.
Changed
line.
Coordinators early in the season,
changed
too.
Changed coordinators. That's, even though the
I forgot
coordinator
about that.
Benefited him.
Right, it did help, but like still had to adjust.
It's an adjustment. But, again, that's kind of the point of why this narrative is stupid because, again, all that talent didn't overcome the situation. Most, more often than not, running back talent doesn't overcome bad situations. So that's kind of my point. Like, going forward – with running backs, I don't really care about your evaluation of their YouTube clips from college. Like,
it's more volume and situation. Is
volume and situation, and when that meets with a talented player, then it can really explode like a Todd Gurley this year.
Right.
But it can also be doomed if those two things don't line up.
The one weird thing about the whole Joe Mixon situation is, and I had been harping on this all year, is the fact that, you know, you lose Andrew Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler on the offensive line, and all
big
of a
losses.
Sudden. Jeez, huge losses on the offensive line, and they looked a little bit lost on offense. That being said, there have been a lot of coaching staffs that have been able to work around offensive line woes. I was curious as to see whether or not Marvin Lewis would be able to do that. He had a veteran quarterback in Andy Dalton and obviously a superstar wide receiver in A.J. Green. So, again, we go into the season with some optimism here because Joe Mixon could be walking into a pretty good situation. Could be walking into a pretty good situation. So, but and obviously the floor kind of fell out from underneath the Bengals, and you get what you get. But Joe Mixon, I thought during the regular season I thought he was abysmal. And again,
he's terrible in many games.
Same situation, same team, all of these things. Gio Bernard absolutely outplayed him.
And I wonder too, you know, this going back to his college evaluation, like, I think it got overlooked the fact that he was in a committee with Samaje Perine at Oklahoma. I mean, he had two games of over 20 carries in his final year of Oklahoma.
That's what I'm saying.
Oklahoma. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
It's a big adjustment to then be like, no, this guy's just going to walk into a feature back role in the NFL.
Well, this is a big reason why when people were telling me that Joe Mixon was the most talented running back in the draft, my eyes were just like, I was the white guy like blinking gif. I just didn't understand. And it was a loaded class as we had talked about before. But the Big 12 is a more wide open conference as well. You give this guy a little bit of space, he's definitely a great athlete. Plus, he came in with all the baggage.
I wasn't a big Joe Mixon guy.
Real quick, spinning this ahead to next year, I'm wondering how Cincinnati's going to approach this backfield because Giovanni Bernard is still under contract, but I actually believe they have an out after this year. Jeremy Hill is no longer under contract.
Right.
So do they want to get rid of Bernard, or because he performed so well, keep him and potentially give him more work?
That's
what
I would
groom Mixon. I think that's the most logical step, but. I'm going to be fascinated to watch once the degenerates start drafting on the websites, you know, that open up after the Super Bowl, like
where
Mixon and Bernard are falling in very early.
Mixon's going to go higher.
I think Bernard is a very early target, is like a late round
sleeper.
You know
what I'm
saying? They have, they do have an out.
This year. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Guys, we talked so much about Joe Mixon this year with the Bengals. What about John Ross?
Oh, my God.
Who helped me scratch John Ross?
Oh, my God.
The name doesn't ring a bell.
What happened?
We don't talk about it because he was not fantasy relevant, but this was a guy.
He was not relevant, period.
He was not relevant, period. Maybe he wasn't relevant on his own team.
He had a fumble.
I don't even know if he was a real person.
He had two. I think he had two targets.
Crazy.
No catches, one rush and a fumble.
Unbelievable. So, first round pick?
He ran that 40.
Top 10
Don't fall
pick.
In love with 40
top
times.
Top 10
In that coaching, in the coach speak article that I wrote that we talked about.
There had to be something about John Ross.
Oh, there was. Marvin Lewis, my little sign off was a Marvin Lewis special for the road. Marvin Lewis said after they took him in the draft, he called Ross an all-around football player, not just a speed guy. Not but 6 months later did the very same Marvin Lewis say to the media in regards to that very same John Ross, he let me down in a striking public shaming of his oft-injured rookie receiver.
He was bad.
Just terrible.
He was so bad. It was amazing. Adrian Peterson in New Orleans. This is the part where I was reading your column, and I said, oh, my goodness.
Well, this part is lengthy, too, but tracking the whole thing is amazing.
That's what I'm saying. But it was so lengthy and so detailed, I was like, oh, my God, Adrian Peterson has hurt you, Matt Hart.
Well, so...
Well, you were one of the people that did kind of buy into him.
I did. It's not even that I bought into, like, all of these narratives. I just bought into, like, oh, he's a goal line back in a good offense. But this story, it's just one of those things, like, mid-writing, it just kind of came to me, and I did. It ended up being so long, I actually cut out like two or three more narratives I was gonna write because I was like,
"So funny."
So I basically made the analogy that.
Please read his piece just for the Adrian Peterson part, because again, you will see the hurt and the pain in the writing, and it's great.
made the analogy that Adrian Peterson and the Saints were like that doomed couple. Your two friends, you know, that get together that just aren't right for each other at all, but they try to convince you throughout their relationship that no, we're actually like really good together. So April 2017, Sean Payton indicates that Adrian Peterson will have a clear role. We're a great fit. We just know what we want, your two friends say to each other. They proclaim it all too earnestly. Remember this specific part because it does pay off later. May 2017, Adrian Peterson is working on his pass-catching ability.
We've heard this story every offseason.
Every offseason.
Since Adrian Peterson was drafted 100%. In 2007.
Again, just a hint for all you kids out there, all you love-lust folk, if you have to change who you are at the core of your being, this is probably not a relationship that you need to be in. Adrian Peterson has never been an asset in the passing game, and it didn't make any sense for the Saints to sell him that way. But it continues. Early June 2017, teammates gush over Adrian Peterson in OTAs. All right, fine. You posted a few great-looking Instagram pictures of you two. And they were cute. We get it. Like, the filters looked real good. People were starting to kind of be like, you know what? Maybe this might actually work. It convinced a few people. Mid-June 2017, Adrian Peterson believes Drew Brees will help him improve as a pass catcher.
Still working on it.
It's still going to happen. This big difference that we have, it's not that bad.
This next one was so outrageous.
July 2017, Adrian Peterson wants to surpass 500 receiving yards on the season.
I think I fell out of my damn chair when I read that headline in the summer.
And this is when your two friends, they start to get a little – too ridiculous.
Okay, okay.
You know, she's starting to wear some polo wardrobe because, you know, but that's not really the style she's normally wearing. She's changing her clothes. He's going to plays with her, even though he thinks that, like, the most great theater is the vintage episodes of Cheers. You know, this 32-year-old running back, suddenly he's going to do things he's never done. It's just not going to happen. Come on.
Oh,
early September 2017, Adrian Peterson glares at Sean Payton on the sideline after running for 18 yards in his revenge game against the Vikings. Now, this is when you know we're at a point
of
the
end
in
the
relationship. Yep. This is their first big public fight.
It is.
Yep. It's beginning of the end.
It's brutal. It's ugly. This is when you know there's really no coming back from it. But
none.
They will still try. They will still try.
Yes.
Mid-September 2017, Sean Payton says he doesn't believe they ever discussed featuring Peterson. Remember when he said they'll have a clear role?
No role. What?
Here's your payoff. Early October 2017, Saints running back coach Joel Thomas thinks it's just a matter of time until
just a matter of time, baby.
I wish you weren't a liar.
Just a matter of time. You know this isn't working. They know this isn't working.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean that these two jilted lovers can't have one last good night together.
Okay.
Over dinner at a restaurant, they shared an important memory in their early days. They'll look at each other fondly. He remembers her cute sneezes and piles of theater critic books and a faint chuckle of endearment. She thinks of his insistence. Black is her color, not the pink. How he'd get around to putting these clothes in the hamper with an eye roll, but one tinged with a hint of fading affection. The couple heads home together one last time with a few empty words, both knowing their overdue separation isn't far down the line. Mid-October 2017, the Saints ship off Adrian Peterson to the Arizona Cardinals for a conditional sixth-round pick.
That's right. Traded him for nothing.
It was just like, it's such a, like,
what a journey.
Just going through all of those headlines again, it's like, wow, what a journey.
What a journey.
Because if you look at the, I mean, going into last week's game,
yeah,
you just remember, like, you kind of like, oh, damn, that's right. Adrian Peterson did play for the Saints at one point this year.
Crazy.
By the way, speaking of his pass catching ability, I think he had 4 drops on 19 targets.
That's not good.
They were working on it.
They were working on it.
How many yards did he fall short of 500 at? That's the real question.
Oh, what did he have, like 100?
Of the,
not even.
I mean, well, he said he wanted to catch 500 yards. There's no way he had 100 receiving yards.
I don't know. Well, he only had 19 targets, so I mean, I guess that's not feasible, but I don't know, whatever. Anyways, narratives that died.
He had 70.
70. So I was close. It's close enough. Narratives that died, or did they? Let's burn through these very quickly. Zach Ertz only performs in December. Nope, that one's dead.
Destroyed.
Alex Smith can't throw deep. Now, this is an interesting one because he had a lot of long touchdown passes, but
he was the highest rated pro football focus. He had the best passer rating on
deep downfield
on
throws,
20-plus yard throws.
So I'm interested by this, though, because, again, his average depth of throw was still not that great, right?
Mm-hmm. He was just hyper efficient when he would go
right
downfield. So that's the interesting part going forward. I mean, did he have just one?
That's what I'm saying.
Magical season,
was it? I don't know.
Well, and where are we going to find out the answer to that next year? Is it going to be in Kansas City? Obviously, I think, you know, you can't discuss this. Again, he led all quarterbacks in deep passing yards.
Yeah.
In deep passing touchdowns. He tied with Russell Wilson there. And deep passing quarterback rating.
Which is so interesting.
And even Pro Football Focus's accuracy rating on deep passes. But how much of that is Tyreek Hill? Obviously, you can't.
That's what I'm saying.
You can't discount that. Like, his first year as the starting receiver.
Even Travis Kelce to a degree.
Absolutely. So is Smith just – was this an outlier season? And where is he gonna be playing next year?
I would think it's an outlier season. I hope he comes back with KC. It's just – it's a smart football move to bring him back. I mean, they've got everybody cost-controlled. I don't understand.
I really don't understand. I don't think it's an outlier season, to be honest. I just think it was a culmination of the offense finally getting the pieces around him, too. We've seen Alex Smith throughout his career be able to throw deep at times in the right situations with the right pieces.
You're right.
He's not a guy that's going to be able to chuck it deep no matter who's around him. But with the offense, Tyreek Hill taking the next step, Travis Kelce being there, it was all working out. You think, like, 2 years ago, who the hell was he going to throw deep to?
Mm. It's more of a mindset with Alex Smith, I always thought. I thought he could throw it deep if he wanted to, but he doesn't want to because he wants to protect that ball at all costs.
It's how much of it's him, how much of it's the system.
Yeah.
And I think honestly, I think we won't get an answer to that question until we see until we see Patrick Mahomes operating the system. He's obviously a much more aggressive
Super aggressive. Right, right, exactly. I don't know. KC would be – I think they would be pretty stupid, actually, to let Alex Smith go. They got Patrick Mahomes. I mean, cost control. It doesn't matter. Who cares? Just have them both on the roster. What difference does it make? I don't get it. All right, that being said, long layoff, optimism. You wrote this one in here, Matt Harmon.
I did, because this one, every year, there's always at least one player.
Martavis Bryant.
That, yeah, like the long layoff optimism. And I even mean more like suspension or injury related. Like in 2016, I remember it was Deion Lewis. Like people were like, oh, Deion's back. Like he's going to get rolling. And he never did, really, until
Thomas Rawls.
Until the postseason. Thomas Rawls. Ever. This year was Doug Martin.
Doug Martin.
People took to, and I was, yes. I was one of them. I bought in hard on the Doug Martin thing. Unfortunately, he didn't. He did make it into the narrative's piece. But like he was another one that it was sold. Like, oh, this is going to be like 2015. He's going to come right in. He could be great again.
He did look great in his first game. He ran well, got the touchdown. I was like, it's happening.
He was
legitimately terrible the rest of the year.
So bad.
And you had to sit on him for three games as he was suspended to start the year.
And you had to sink like a fifth round pick to get him too, because everybody started like sniping each other round by round,
slowly but surely up the ADP. So that's one that I would like. I want to be done with that narrative, but I don't think people will ever be done with
it. No, you're not going to be able to quit it. There's always going to be somebody that hooks you back.
Oh, for sure. 100%.
And I think there are some guys that it's worth it, like a Le'Veon Bell, when he's going to miss a couple games to his suspension because he's Le'Veon Bell. He has a secure role. He's going to come back. But like for these second-tier running backs or whatever, forget about it. I know it's like, what are you waiting for?
Yeah.
You know, if I'm willing to wait those – 2 to 3 games or whatever, or longer at the start of the year, if I know when on the other side there's going to be like a top 5 back. Martin was never, even in the best scenario, Martin was never going to be a top 5
back. What a strange career Doug Martin's had too. Like, you just look at his like year by year totals and think of the ups and downs of like how good he was, injuries,
exactly,
suspensions.
Bizarre.
Like,
he's probably going to get cut this year.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, for sure.
A fresh start might be good for him though.
I agree with that. I think that, you know, and again, the Tampa Bay offense this year, it cannot be overstated how dysfunctional their offense was.
They were among my top when I wrote that disappointments piece. It was a lot of them were individual players, but
Tampa.
Three offenses made it collectively, and they were the Oakland Raiders, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Tennessee Titans.
It was so bad. I just, Dirk Cutter. I mean, come on. I don't get it, man. Anyways, here's the last narrative that died or did it. Wide receivers need a good quarterback to produce top.
So we always, like, at the end of the year, we always try to have these, like, what did we learn? Like, what lessons did we learn from fantasy football at the end of the season?
Yeah.
And last year, it felt like I heard over and over again, like, I'm done drafting these wide receivers with bad quarterbacks. Because I think a lot of people were stung by Allen Robinson with Blake Bortles.
Right,
and DeAndre Hopkins with C above. All obviously mostly Brock Osweiler.
Right.
Most people were, but like if you look at this year, top 10 in PPR points.
Okay.
You've got DeAndre Hopkins. We know he has, again, bad quarterback play all throughout, except where Deshaun Watson was in there. You have Larry Fitzgerald, who endured bad quarterback play and was productive throughout. You had Jarvis Landry with Jay Cutler playing terribly.
Matt Moore.
You have and Adam Thielen. Obviously, he had, you know, a good quarterback this year, but still, like, again. He got good quarterback play, and that's the thing. Like, if you had gone into the season being like,
Case Keenum
is going to be the quarterback for Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs,
like,
again,
nope,
with
I'm
that
out.
Mindset, you would have been all the way out.
Yeah, yeah.
Goodbye.
So that's just something, like, I'm just kind of forget that narrative going forward and think, or we'll see next year, like, does the narrative die or whatever. Like,
yeah.
But for me, it's like how good these receivers were, and for most of them,
volume.
The theme is volume for all these guys. I mean, Hopkins, 175 targets. Larry Fitzgerald, 161 targets. Same with Jarvis Landry, 161, 143 for Adam Thielen. And, like, those are the guys, like, they were able to boost up their stock and join these guys with good quarterbacks like Antonio Brown, Keenan Allen, Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, etc.
Okay, there you go. Let's close out with a round of daily daps.
Daps, daps,
daps,
daps,
daps.
Daps.
I like turtles. Alex Gailar.
You're mixing up our drops there.
I am.
Our highly spectacular drops.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Alex Gailar, kick us off.
I'm going to dap two things. First one is just barcades in general.
I love barcades.
They've been making a comeback. I'm glad they're expanding
to
other cities. Yeah, like my sister said they added one in Minneapolis now.
Oh, awesome.
There's a couple that are awesome in Chicago. And when my family was in town, we went to the one downtown called 82. And it's just so fun because, awesome. Like, have a beer and you're playing old school games.
100%.
Like, It was games that I used to play like at the movie theater when we were waiting for the movie to start, or when I would actually go to arcades when those were still a thing.
100%.
And like, damn, it's just so much fun playing those
old
games.
It's the best. It's the absolute best.
Trying to set high scores on like, you know, Centipede or Space Invaders or even the old
Pac-Man or...
Do you remember the big X-Men one where you could have like 4-player side X-Men?
Hell
yeah. We were playing that one.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Man, they're awesome. So Daily Dabs to Barcades, like if you live in a bigger city, like Google it and see if the one's around and that you've never been to.
There's an awesome one in Sherman Oaks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I have to go to
like
that
a
one.
Real, like I'm a thinking, really, really good.
Do they?
Because the one that you're talking about in downtown, that's more of a, it's more dive-ish, right?
No, it's very nice, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's in the Arts District. It's very upscale. They have like a DJ come in at nights.
Arts District.
I've only been to one.
I think I have
Philadelphia.
They're so fun, though.
Yeah, but the one, there's another one that's actually not named in Koreatown. It doesn't even have a name.
I've been to that one, too.
I think it's called like the Blue Ghost or something.
Yeah. No, it's, I forget what it's called, but I think my buddy's uncle works there, is like a part owner of it, and he took me there one time. And it's literally like a hole in the wall, basically.
Underground. Oh, my God.
And they have like, I don't know, like eight or ten machines. Maybe it's not as big, but it's a fun one. But yeah, if you live in a big city or have never been to one, or you're traveling somewhere, just see if there's a barcade around, because it's such a blast. It's so much fun. It's a total nostalgia trip, and you can do it while you're having a beer. So
there's one in Denver that's awesome. The One Up. Have you guys?
I haven't been. One Up.
That's a great name.
Yeah, it's called the One Up, and it's right near Coors Field. When I was doing some stuff for the Broncos last year, we went there. It was awesome.
That's great. Yeah, really cool. And we're not talking about Dave and Buster's.
Oh,
Dave and Buster's is.
No. The ones in that One Up's a great name. Sorry. And the one in Chicago, I was trying to think, is it a great name too, is called Headquarters.
That's cool.
I was like, that's clever.
I love it. I'll actually piggyback.
Sorry. I had one more thing I was going to daily up. Yeah. I'm reading a really interesting book right now called Dark Money by Jane Mayer. If you listen to any of the Positive America things, one of the guys on there, Tommy Vitor, has talked about it a lot. But it's Jane Mayer's a very, very good investigative reporter, and it kind of tracks the Koch brothers and their very, 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 very extremely wealthy people, and how they kind of like accumulated their wealth and how they've been using it to influence politics and other things in America. It's a fascinating book so far. I'm going to try and finish it this weekend, because it's been like every time I pick it up, it gets really good, but then I'm like too tired and falling asleep or whatever. So I'm like, Saturday, this book's going down. But it's a really interesting read if that's something that kind of – if you're into nonfiction or stuff like that, and it's these guys have a lot of money and a lot of influence on the country right now, so
it's crazy, man. It's
very fascinating to see how they're going about it and how they accumulated that wealth.
Crazy, crazy stuff. I will piggyback off your first dap, and I will daily dap NBA Jam, which is celebrating its 25th. 25-year anniversary.
They had that
release.
The barcade. Was that?
Oh yeah,
it's so fun.
Yeah, that's all I played in Denver.
Was it NBA Jam?
Was it NBA Jam?
Yeah. Playing it on the console is such a trip, because I remember like playing it on the Super Nintendo too, but the console one.
It's so fun. Sonics.
Yep,
the old Super Sonics.
It's the best. Gary Payton and Detlef Schrempf. It's funny because legitimately. NBA Jam was one of the reasons why I want to pursue sports broadcasting.
Really? But for the broadcaster things they said during the game?
He's heating up.
Boom
shakalaka. I don't know why. I thought it was so fun, man. I don't know, man.
You were probably too young for NBA Jam, weren't you?
Yeah.
And you didn't give any craps about basketball, I'm assuming, so.
No. I was in on Ken Griffey Jr.'s baseball on N64.
That was fun too.
Ken Griffey Jr.'s
But man,
baseball.
NBA Jam, that was the best.
Oh, it was the best, man. But it was crazy. My second daily dap will go to Wiz Khalifa.
He's still doing things?
Yeah, oh yeah, he's still out there doing things. Right. But he, this came out a year ago, but I just ran across it on the YouTubes. But he does a freestyle over Adele's "Hello." And I'm thinking, oh, this is just going to be atrocious.
It's really good. It is really, really good.
Interesting.
Wiz Khalifa doing a freestyle over Adele's "Hello." He absolutely kills it. Go find it online. It's a power.
I'm gonna watch this later.
Yes, it's a power 106 video. But yeah, go check it out. It's really fun. I came in with like, this is going to be abysmal. But it was awesome. So there you go. Matt Harmon, what do you got?
So I got a couple music daps from scrolling through NPR's Tiny Desk concerts.
I love the Tiny Desk.
Yeah, oh, my God. Those are so good.
Yeah, those are so great. And a couple of the good ones I saw just the last few days. Well, the first one, it's a singer named I, but it looks like it's spelled Ahi. A-H-I, all caps. He's got an incredible voice, like very kind of soulful but a little gravelly too. Definitely check that out.
Yeah.
And the second one, Julian Baker. I actually heard Greg Rosenthal mention her on the ATN podcast too. It was like the day after I was listening. I was like, oh, cool. Like, she's got, I mean, unbelievable, like, probably one of the best singing voices I've ever heard. Just very, like, stuff seems a little dark, but like good piano, like just like one solo guitar and like her singing, it's really, really good. Like, I would recommend actually, before you go listen to her stuff, actually find that Tiny Desk concert segment. And she's just this tiny little like blonde girl,
tiny blonde at a tiny desk.
Yeah, very powerful, very, very powerful voice. I was actually listening to, after my pod was finished, I was listening to, walking into work, I was putting some of that on. I was like, my God, like, just an incredibly talented person. So
yeah, you can literally crush an hour easy just watching NPR's Tiny Desk.
Oh yeah.
Oh, they're so good.
They're
so good.
They have such interesting artists come on there too.
That's what
I was
saying.
Doing that instead of working for an hour here the other day.
It was and you get non-traditional people like T-Pain had an amazing Tiny Desk session. Chance the Rapper had a great Tiny Desk session. So it's non-traditional, you know, folks come through there and they kill it too, man. It's really interesting. It's really, really interesting.
That's like a YouTube time waster that you can just get on.
By the way, the T-Pain one was without auto-tune, obviously, because it's recorded live. And he did it really, really well, which I was surprised by, which, of course, led to the question of, why doesn't he just sing like this normally? Like, what does he need auto-tune?
Because the auto-tune stuff's
fine. Because it's T-Pain.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't get that. Producer Chris, what do you got?
You know what? I'm going to dap a certain segment of NFL fans. We've seen over the last few weeks. For instance, Todd Gurley. Fantasy owners of Todd Gurley, they gave to Shriners, one of his charities.
Oh, this is a
good call. I was thinking about
this,
too.
That was awesome. The Andy Dalton in Buffalo connection, how the Bills gave to Andy Dalton's foundation. Then just recently, Thomas Morstead. So that crushing loss the Saints had, everybody left the field.
Yeah.
And it was mandated that 11 guys needed to come back out for that extra point.
Yeah, they were putting their pads back on,
so
literally.
The officials are trying to get 11 guys to come out there. And Morstead was like the
Here
first guy
Morstead.
To volunteer playing linebacker, you know, for basically an untimed down.
Yeah. Mm.
And Vikings fans saw this and really took to him coming out and showing that sportsmanship and the toughness after such a crushing defeat.
Crushing.
And they started donating to his charity, which is called What You Give Will Grow. I think it's for kids battling cancer.
Okay.
So he said, I appreciate the love. If you guys get to $100,000, I will donate it to a Minnesota hospital. And boom, just like that, $100,000.
Wow.
That Vikings fans donated. So, we get
100 grand?
Up and down about wins and losses, but it's stuff like this, man, that just makes it really, really cool.
And did you see, too, that Bengals fans donated to Blake Bortles' charity?
Yes,
because he knocked the Steelers out of the playoffs?
Yeah.
Like, there have been so many of those at the end of this year. It's been really, it's been a nice footnote
by the way,
this thing.
Just to piggyback off that, a Jacksonville bakery sent Big Ben 7 turnovers. And sent it to Pittsburgh, sent it to their practice facility, and said, Ben, thank you for the 7 turnovers, and turn here 7 turnovers for you.
Oh,
amazing.
Well, A-plus troll job.
Ah.
Yeah, that's why we need Jacksonville in the Super Bowl. We need Duval.
That's
Duval.
What we need.
We need it.
It'd be so fun.
Oh, my God.
I'd have maybe Viking Skolchan versus Duval. Like,
bro, don't get me wrong. I'm picking the Patriots, but I am rooting my ass off.
That's true.
Yeah. Come on. Let's go. What a great show we had today. For producer Chris, the WizKid from Wisconsin, Alex Gelhar, and Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you on Monday.
No franchise. See you later. Oh, sad.
See you later.